So with that, once again, I want to welcome everyone on the call today. Welcome, Juan. Thank you for participating this evening. And with that, I call the meeting to order. Obviously, we're recording this, and Jeremiah has the attendance and guests recorded. So do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Make the motion, Juan Santos, to approve the agenda.
Juan, thank you. Do I have a second?
I second.
Janina.
Madhu Chawani.
Okay, Madhu, thank you. All right, Kennedy.
Aye.
Thank you. Madhu.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Zina.
Aye.
Juan.
Aye.
Denise. You're on mute, Denise, just so you know. Is that an aye, Denise? Okay, I'll move on to Janina. Janina.
Aye.
Anthony, aye. Denise, if you can hear us, we can't hear you. But that being said, we have enough to approve the agenda.
Okay.
So with that, I will move to Fernandez for the opener.
We're going to forego the opener for today because we have a lot of principals here who are extremely tired after many weeks of very hard work, many months, and I want to respect their time and try to get through the gist of the agenda that I wanted them to stay for. We'll come back to opener next time, but for this time, I just wanted to forego it, if it's okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Denise, just so everyone knows in the chat box, she did say aye. So I think that's okay to give her approval via messaging until she can fix her sound. Okay, with that, any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? Okay, are there any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay, with that, I will turn it back over to Fernaz for reports and presentations.
Okay, so for the meeting today, we are not going to have a study session, but I did want to take the opportunity today for my leadership presentation to introduce you all to next board meeting study session. So at the next board meeting, we're going to spend some good time going deep into our strategic priorities benchmark chart and getting feedback from board members on the benchmark chart, which continues to be an amazing resource for leadership in our decision making. But I wanted to just take the 5 minutes of my presentation time to, I'm going to put it in the chat for you all. So that you can access it yourselves. And then I'm going to share my screen and just walk you through this. And my hope for next time, so we're gonna have a short meeting between now and our next long meeting. It's gonna be a short approval meeting for some important documents. And then when we have our next long meeting, I'd really love to spend some time on the strategic priorities of the organization and talking through this benchmark chart and how we're looking at it and getting your deep questions on it. So with that, I'm going to just share screen and walk you through it so that you can take some time between now and our next long meeting to really understand our strategic priorities benchmark chart and be prepared to ask some deep questions on it. So the first thing I wanted to introduce you to is at the very, very top of this benchmark chart that I see a lot of you linked into right now, you can see that we have our organizational priorities. So we have the ratios of our time at cabinet meetings that we're spending on each of these priorities. And though we talked about two priorities, the reality of our life is that we have three priorities, with probably the most prominent one being safety at this time, right? So We have the amount of time at our meetings that are now dedicated to each of those priorities reported there. Then you can see on our safety dashboard that our vaccination rates are continuing to go up. We have high levels of participation in all of our testing efforts. Just this last week, we tested our entire student population and only had two positive tests in the entire student population testing associated with post Thanksgiving holiday, like a thorough student testing process. So then you see the health and safety data there. Then you can see our advisory priority data. And if you look closely at this, there's some exciting data to be seen here. Our student connectedness with our schools, you can see, has shot up significantly in the last few years. And it was especially high during the pandemic, but for a start of the year assessment of student connectedness, that's a pretty good number. And there's more data on our advisory survey that's depicted there. Then we have our the things that we perceive to be linked to student climate and to advisory. So we perceive attendance to be like, do students want to come to school? Are we making it a warm and safe place enough for them? So attendance is connected to that. Attrition is connected to that. And we look specifically at the data related to all students, but also in the parentheses, Black students. Is it proportional to the ratio of our student population that are Black? And then referrals. So we look at that data as well. And as you can see, there's been an uptick in referrals, which is consistent with schools all throughout the country. Depression, suicidal ideation, and discipline issues all throughout the country are up. And a lot of this was expected, but it's hard to manage. So I want to take a moment to sincerely appreciate all that our principals are holding right now. As you look at this data, these are data points, but what they're holding is really significant. So here you see a placeholder for the chief academic officer's data, and that's what we're going to be going deep into with Danielle today. So we haven't decided specifically what data points we want to pull out and look at here, but we're continuing to look at GPAs and ELA course passage rates and math course passage rates there from last year. Below this point is everything that we look at every year, our LCAP goals. These are the things that determine whether or not we're going to get renewed as a charter school. And these are the things that we're consistently held accountable for. As you can see from all of the gray here, a lot of these data points aren't available on a regular basis. So we have to wait until these set months, or we have to wait until the end of the year. So they're lag data points for many of them. And as you scroll down further and further, you will see more climate and engagement data here, which you can see here, our chronic absenteeism rates have dropped at all of the sites, which is very exciting, thus marked green by Robert. And our California Healthy Kids Survey was depicted above, but you can see that right there again. And then our operations and facilities data, we're going to be refining this a little bit more before we come back to you next time. But what you can see is our enrollment numbers are slightly down from prior years, but that's been strategic as we've talked to you all about it. We have allowed a small amount of attrition, but we are looking at these numbers and continuing to determine whether or not we want to bring back two or three students to both keep it safe and to keep our enrollment at a sustainable rate. And so with that, I'm going to stop sharing this. And hopefully that's enough of an introduction to our strategic priorities benchmark chart for you guys to think of that as a little bit of homework prior to our next board meeting to go deep into it, look at it, and come prepared with questions and ideas about how we can refine it or strengthen it and understand it more deeply. Any questions on that? Okay, and so before I hand off to Danielle, Allison isn't with us today, but she's off doing recruitment for the schools. And I think most of you have already heard of the, you know, good news, given that we've been all waiting for this for quite some time. But the good news is that at ECMS Gardena, the tenant who has been preventing us from gaining access to the campus has moved out. So we're very optimistic and excited about what that means for our students and our school. And just wanted to share that good news with you. I'm sure she would have wanted to share it with you. Did I say MSECHS Gardena? Sorry. she would have wanted to share that with you, but I wanted to just make sure you all knew. And with that, I'm going to hand off to Danielle. Oh, are there any questions? Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. Nice to see you all. I'm going to get my screen sharing going. So I'm going to present to you a little bit about our priority this year with a focus on the academic side of things. And I'm going to save time in my portion of the agenda to for questions. So as I'm presenting, if you think of something, please jot it down, or you could put it in the chat, and there's going to be time to engage in some Q&A at the end. So please know that there'll be time. I'm not going to talk for 20 minutes without pausing to exchange and dialogue. Okay, so you'll remember that this year we set two priorities, and I have been calling them priorities for the new normal that we find ourselves in the returning back to in-person learning, and as the COVID-19 pandemic unfolds. But just a reminder, those are strengthen ECS advisory to reinforce that every tenet that every child is a blessing, and that's on the social emotional side, and continuing our efforts in confronting anti-Blackness and racism that we started last year. And then on the instructional side, implementing high leverage instructional best practices. So this is familiar to you, I know, just a reminder. And then this might be, I can't remember if this is an image that I showed in a previous presentation, but I showed this at our summer all staff convening before the school year started. It's called a FICnet, and it's a image that I use in a lot of presentations because I think it really represents how we made the decision about those two priorities here. The net is you use it in an estuary or a shallow waters. It's anchored in three places, as you can see. And it's kind of, it's anchored down. And basically the idea is it's fish swim in to the net. That's the notion. And it's easy to get into. It's wide at the opening and it's narrow at the end, right? Easy to get into, hard to get out of. That's sort of the takeaway and the reason why I like this image. I'm not a fisher person, but I kept talking this summer about it's about a series of fishing nets. And then I found this and I was like, yes, this is what I mean, even though I've never actually done this. but the idea is when we chose these priorities, we were thinking about that. As we come back to school from a year and a half of distance learning, what do we need to support student learning? And the notion was we want to have this multi-tiered system of support. That's not a new idea, but we really do want it to be easy to get into our system of supports and hard to get out of. We want it to be easy for students to access tier one and these priorities and then to get additional supports as needed. And we want it to be hard for them to swim around the net, to escape the interlocking supports that we are offering. Sorry, this image is sort of that representation with the multi-tiered system of support. But as we were planning this summer, and you'll remember this summer was I can remember it too, when it was okay to operate and move around and go shopping without a mask on. There was a moment in the pandemic when that was allowed and it was okay and it was safe and it was exciting. And that's the moment when we were planning and setting these as our priorities. As we moved into August and then September, you'll also remember that like we had to kind of reevaluate and say, okay, yes, those are the right priorities, but there's some basic stuff here that we have to address, the basic safety needs of our kids. And we had, you know, underestimated how hard that was going to be. And, you know, welcome Jen Fenton, who came and joined us and has really helped structure and systematize all of our health and safety supports, and really helped us ensure that bringing kids back to campus was really safe for them, and also that we could meet these other levels of Maslow's hierarchy in terms of belonging and love and moving all the way up to self-actualization. And so this is another way to represent that same notion that we've got these three priorities. We thought it was two, but really it's three, like Farnaz just said, and it's really about health and safety, social, emotional, and then academic. And over on that far right side is where I tend to live. And our charge is a big one. How do we ensure that all ECS students are making academic progress this year? And we said, after some work in a summer working group, interviewing students and parents and teachers and other stakeholders, that it's all about this multi-tiered system of support. But when you look at this image, it's a little bit overwhelming. There's a lot of words and there's a lot of things in it. So the idea is really, how do we zero in on and focus in on the academic side of what needs to happen at that widest part of the net, the part that helps get students into the system of supports as they're coming back to campus. And our summer working group, we're asking this question a lot of different ways. What does that look like in a lesson plan? What does it look like in the classroom? How are we monitoring student gains? And how are these supports on the academic side going to ensure that all of our kids are learning, but particularly the ones who historically have not made as many academic gains as other student groups? Right, so then we had this question, how do we focus on teaching and learning in the new normal? And the answer that we kept circling in around is by focusing. That image that I showed you before had all kinds of words on this page, and really we have to zero in on the highest levers, the things that we think if we do them well, will have a broad reach and a deep impact. And we selected checks for understanding and student interactions as those high leverage instructional best practices. And here's some new way I'm thinking about this, and Charity is helping me too. So this isn't just my work, but if we think about it, student interactions are the process of learning. So if you're in a classroom and you're watching learning happening, a lot of the time it's going to be kids processing new information, practicing new skills. It's going to be them working with each other or asking questions, revising their work, maybe sharing their work or asking a question or answering a question. So that's the student interaction side of this. And then there's the checks for understanding. That's the product of their learning, a product of that process. How we're able to see by them independently engaging in answering a question or writing a short prompt that they understand, or that practice or that that turn and talk actually help them synthesize some information, that they're able to reflect on their thinking and make it visible to themselves, to, sorry about that, the teacher, to their classmates. So these are the two things we landed on after a lot of decision-making. Then we made this checklist, because that last thing, you know, if you look at this slide, this is gonna look different depending on the classroom you go in, depending on the content area that you're observing. So this next slide is sort of a checklist we made to try to further refine what are we looking for when we go into a classroom, if we're talking about student interactions and if we're talking about checks for understanding. So this is a long list, and it's organized, you'll notice, by what the teacher is doing and what the student is doing. So, you know, the teacher is doing a lot of things when it comes to supporting interactions and the process of learning. And when we look at students, we should see them doing some key things to demonstrate that interaction with each other is supporting their process of learning. And the same thing for the checks for understanding side in the blue, what the teacher is doing versus what the student is doing. Sorry, my mouse is very sensitive. I'm not going to touch it. That was the summer work, all that I just kind of showed you. Then at a certain point, I'd say around September, after things are starting to settle down and we're getting a hang of contact tracing and quarantine and independent study, we kind of paused as a leadership group and said, okay, we're on this path and we may not be moving at the same pace we thought we would, but we're making some gains. Where are we headed and how are we gonna ensure that all kids are learning and making academic progress by the end of this year? So this is kind of the pathway that we have found ourselves on. It's not like complete, but it's I would say the best one slide description of where we are and our process. So we're starting and I think we have already started and are solidly begun the process of collecting data to understand visiting classrooms, documenting what we're seeing using that checklist that I just showed you, just to understand school-wide trends. How are we doing in terms of student interactions and checks for understanding in semester one? And then after we've got a critical mass of data and we really understand the school-wide trends, the next step is to communicate with the principal, sharing some of that data with teachers in a depersonalized way. So it's not, you know, what you personally are doing, but how are we doing as a school? How are we doing as a grade level, as a department? And using that opportunity of sharing the data with teachers to ask them to reflect on their practice and how it is related to those overall trends. And then, and that's kind of where we are right now. We've collected data, we're communicating, teachers are reflecting or are in the habit of ongoing reflection at some schools. And the next step, number four, is sort of what are we gonna zoom in on? Of all that long list of things I showed you on the checklist, what's the practice that a given school site, a given grade level, a given teacher really needs to improve upon to result in improved outcomes for every student in the classroom? And we've got a tool. I mentioned we made a checklist. It was a physical like pen and paper checklist, but we also made a Google form that when I go into a classroom, at least I use it on my phone. So it's really easy to walk into a classroom, document what I'm seeing and then submit it all in the 10-minute period. We've been using the same tool across all four school sites and by site leaders, home office staff, and instructional coaches. And the tool allows us to document the number of classroom visits we're doing, the number of look-fors we're seeing. We can organize it and disaggregate it by teacher, grade level, et cetera. And then it also is identifying key teacher moves and student moves that we're looking for when we go in the classroom. So we have a kind of shared understanding of what we mean by student interactions and what we mean by checks for understanding and what we're looking for. And these are some of the questions that if you were using this tool and going into a classroom, these are some of the things you could check off. I'll pause for a minute so you can kind of skim and scan that. There's a lot of things on this list. So like I said, right now we're at this data collection point to see all the things and what we're headed toward is zooming in on some of these things based on what the data say is maybe an area that we're doing consistently, but the outcomes don't match or we're not doing it all. And so we need to focus on it depending on the school and the school leader. So far, this is some of the data that we've collected, and I'll show you in another slide some more, but 167 visits to classrooms have been documented across the organization since October 5th, which is big because as of October 5th, we didn't have this tool. And so that number was zero. Of all the classroom observations completed, student interactions were observed among students 53% of the time, and checks for understanding were observed 16% of the time among students. And then there's a little pie graph. If you're wondering, like, is this evenly distributed data from all schools? You can see in that graphical representation, we've got data from all four schools, which is exciting. And then this is a report that Robert Maxwell made that gets into the more granular level data. For every one of those questions that I showed you before on the form, we can see the green means it was observed and the gray means it was not observed. So we can start to notice trends here, things that are strong in terms of implementation across schools, areas where there's limited implementation. Right now, it's just a true false. So it's not a qualitative measure. It's just, is it happening? Are we seeing it? Is it not? This is for, this slide is depicting student interactions, all the student interaction look fors from October 5th. And then this one is the checks for understanding. So you'll notice there's less green in the bars on this slide. Student interactions we're seeing more of, partly because that's the process of learning. So there's more time spent on the practice and the processing than on the checking for understanding. Again, ask me questions in a moment when I pause. Just some overall wins that we've seen, as I mentioned already, we've had a huge increase in visits to classrooms and documentation of those visits. And we're using leadership collaboration meetings like Cabinet and BPNN lead meeting I run to observe instruction. Like we go in together, do it together. We are cultivating shared understanding of these things by observing and discussing what we're seeing. And we're using the time to analyze data together. Each site is customizing like the implementation on their site to meet the specific needs of their campus, which is, you know, very much the ECS way and feels like a win. And then there's some challenges. This is a hard year. you know, big exclamation point times three. And there's just this question that keeps coming up about how do we rise to meet the urgent needs of our students in a way that allows us to sustain ourselves, our staff. So we're here, you know, tomorrow to keep doing more of it. That's a big, I think, enduring question, but it's particularly resonant this year. And then there's another thing that's coming up how do we better draw a connection between all this data and these things that I've mentioned here to what we've done before, reading apprenticeship, confronting anti-Blackness and racism, which were our priorities last year, and I think are very much present in the things that I've been showing you, but they're not explicit. And that's consistent feedback that we've gotten from teachers to leaders all up and down. Like, how does this relate to what we were doing before? Is this a departure? And why? And if it's not, I don't get it. I don't see the connection. So that's some of the feedback that we've heard across the board. And there's more, but those are just a couple of highlights that I wanted to share. And that is my cue to pause and give you an opportunity to ask questions, or I can go back to certain slides if you want to dig into anything that I've shared, but that's sort of a snapshot of where we are right now and some of the stuff we've accomplished so far in terms of our instructional priority. What questions do you have?
I was wondering, and you mentioned that that you said right now these data are all true and false. Do you have plans to maybe make it more granular, more shades of gray in each one, in some of these categories?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ken. I think what I've been saying, and principals, you know, feel free to weigh in here, is that we should be looking at the data we have right now to help kind of point us in a direction of focus. So within student interactions, what's an issue that you're noticing? Dave, for instance, gave an example, like you might have, here, I'll show my slide again. You might have, if you look here under teacher, this one, the 70%, you might have high implementation of teacher asks related questions, right? So that's happening in 70% of the observations, but Dave raised like, but what if when I go into classrooms, I'm seeing that it's, yes, I'm seeing it, but the quality of it's no good, right? So I think, we want to do that, Ken, but not for everything on here, because I think that's going to contribute to that overwhelming feeling that people are saying. So it's like, it's the next step, I think, is picking the right things to zero in on. And I've been thinking about them actually is like some of them cluster together naturally. So maybe it's like picking the right two ones, like Geneva, for instance, and I don't know if Geneva's on here, but there she is. And principals, please jump in to help me if I'm representing what you said differently. But Geneva mentioned that at her site, they're focusing on this one, teacher names the think time, right? The teacher says, okay, you're going to have 5 minutes to do blank, and everyone's going to be quiet, and we're going to have silent time for you to process your thinking. And Geneva's bet is if I support teachers of that, hold this as an expectation, model it, et cetera, then I'm going to see this number jump up. And I'm also probably going to see this number jump up. So the circulate and jot, because if teachers are giving silent think time, they're also, for students, they're also giving time for them to circulate and pay attention to what kids are writing as they're thinking. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of what I see as the next phase. We've got this kind of global data, now zero in on something specific, and then we can talk about the qualitative nature of circulate and jot. What is that exactly? What does that mean? What does it look like? What's the purpose of it? Can we rate it, et cetera?
Thanks.
Thank you.
So Danielle, my question is kind of similar in nature, I guess. It kind of all ties together, but I mean, I love the fact that you isolated in terms of student interactions first, and you have all these different criterias. And then that student interaction then leads into actually, the checking for understanding the product. But the question, very similar, like you said, some of them you can aggregate together. My question is, we notice, and if we go back to those green charts, they were for example, student interaction, the ones that had really low were response to prompt 40%, and then teachers circulate 8%. So those were low there. And then we go to check for understanding, there's three that really stand out. Student reflects on thinking, that's 9%. Student complete exit ticket, 9%. Teacher reflection tool, 7%. So all of a sudden you're like, okay, these are the ones I want to focus on, but that's not necessarily true. So the question I have is, how do you prioritize? What are the ones that are most impactful? Because you know, just going for the low ones, that could have zero impact.
Yeah, that's, I love that question. And yes, agreed. I had a conversation with Dr. Guardado some time ago on this very topic. And we were kind of thinking about, like, it goes back, I think, to that question that I said is one of the main kind of challenges for us about meeting student needs and in doing it in a sustainable way. So one thing we kind of discussed was, okay, what's some low hanging fruit? What's something that you could show teachers that, you know, it, like, I want us to focus here, and then we know we're gonna like move the needle really fast, because that that motivates people. That makes them feel like, okay, when we all focus on this one thing, we can change it. We can move the needle. But yeah, I was, you know, we also talked about like that exit ticket, for instance. That one seems like a key one to, if teachers really, it's one we've been talking about widely, if teachers really are going to know where students are in relation to the learning goal and how to make adjustments in a lesson or in a next lesson, that seems like a really high leverage one. But that also is one that you can't just say, we're going to do exit tickets and teachers get good at it, right? That one is like, that one would require some like professional development and some coaching, some modeling, some recurring learning. So I think that's kind of how we're thinking about it, like both in terms of impact and then also how do you weave it into PD over a period of time? How do you look at the existing systems and structures that you have and see how they can kind of come together to support it. So yes, that I think is the point we're at. When we focus on the thing, we're trying to be really thoughtful and intentional about what it is that we select as the focus move so that it is the most impactful.
Okay, so then am I allowed one more question?
Of course.
So thank you. That is an amazing analysis. Just you guys are doing this deep dive in. It's just like when you talk, I just get so excited seeing you and the principals, envisioning you guys, you know, in the room talking about these things. So that's exciting. So if I can, based on, it sounds like you're doing the job to prioritize. So if we look at the one that may be tied to, I don't know, social emotional, like response to prompt, like it's student engagement. Like if we got that up, I don't know the data, but it just seems to me like it would make sense that that would be an important one. Again, having no data, that could also impact the social emotional and the students getting back from the pandemic, and that maybe they're having a hard time because 40% is low. So are there other social emotional issues that are impeding the learning here? So is that, have you guys looked at that in that through that lens?
Have we looked at it through that lens? I don't know if we've looked at it through that particular lens. But I think we have, like, one of the things that happens when we look at any one of these little bars is a kind of question about like, okay, do we go in at the right time? Like, you know, if we are often going in at the end of the lesson, is that the time when kids are responding to the prompt out loud, or is that the time when they're doing processing independently? So there's some question about like the validity of the data and whether we're doing it at the right moment as part of our analysis. In terms of the impact of social emotional, I think that's something for us to consider. And principals, jump in here if you have a different opinion. But I'm not sure that we've done that in a really systemic way, the way you're talking about it, Kennedy. So it's worth adding to the conversation.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, I mean, I just love the way you broke it down in terms of process for learning leading to product for learning. So if the process where the student are doing their interaction, if it's being impacted by social emotional factors, how do we understand that? And also your whole thing about students are a blessing, that seems to be a huge strategy for improving the emotional and psychological health of the students post the pandemic. So, and then that's what I mean. Are you looking at this through those lens as you're trying to impact the student interaction piece and remove those roadblocks?
Yeah. I think we need to integrate a little bit more because we've kind of been thinking about them as separate. Not that they are separate, but just in terms of like simplifying conversation, clarity about who does what, we've been kind of separating. So I think it's worth, that note is worth us kind of revisiting.
I would just say that today I had the opportunity to go into a lot of classes at Inglewood, and they weren't advisory classes, but it was really inspiring to see the ways in which the classroom teachers were integrating some of the prompts that were created for advisory so beautifully into their in their classroom lessons to prompt student engagement. So whether or not it's intentional on our part to integrate them, it's really vivid that the teachers are doing so naturally because they're taking what they're learning in advisory and really integrating it more into their classroom sessions. And I just wanted to also make transparent to you guys that right now, as we're looking at these priorities and how vast they are and how challenged our time is because of the safety measures and COVID, and it's very clear to us that this is probably going to be a multi-year effort for us to be able to go deeper each year and strengthen these priorities rather than selecting new priorities, coming up with tools like this again and editing over and over again. So it's like, how do we go deeper so that we further refine over a two-year period?
I think I might be out of time for Nas. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you all for questions. If you have more or different ones, please feel free to put them in the chat or email me. I'm happy to have a more conversation offline.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. And so now we have Michael Martucci sharing from, he's the director of student services, which oversees special education and our English language development program. So thank you, Michael. Are you on mute?
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Perfect. I was nervous, so I figured we'd start off with being on mute. Hi, I'm Michael Martucci. I'm our Director of Student Services. Super excited to present a couple of things to you all today. So just a quick little table of contents. I'm going to share with you two things that we're doing in special ed that are new and two things that we're doing that are new in ELD. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our co-teaching inquiry project on our new service tracking system in special education, our work we've been doing with Ensemble, and our Elevation Data platform for ELD. I'm gonna stop for questions at the end of each section, but you can feel free to interrupt me as well if you have any burning questions. I don't really mind. Just in general, just thinking about what's kind of driving the current work in special ed and ELD, really thinking about a systems approach. How do we leverage kind of our best practices and network resources across our sites and really build systems that are similar and repeatable across our sites? Thinking around sustainable inclusive practices, what are we good at? What do we need to improve? How do we make sure that all of our student groups are improving? Both academically and socio-emotionally. And then thinking around like inquiry to broader level improvement, like how can we work with small groups in certain sites to really do some deep learning and then move forward with broader implementation and broader improvement across our network. Any questions on this? So let's dive into the co-teaching inquiry project with this funny little character. This is a quote from one of our trainings. Co-teaching allows teachers to collect more data, provide more feedback, and offer more targeted supports that lead students to the same rigorous academic, behavioral, and socio-emotional learning outcomes. So thinking around sort of like how is co-teaching advantageous for both teachers in the co-teaching pair. So just a brief little overview of our inquiry project. We have co-teaching teams from 3 of 4 sites, and we have 4 co-teaching teams total. We have 6 PD sessions, which are after hours. So they're stipended. Thus far, we've covered introduction to co-teaching, all the different models, what co-teaching is. And then we dove deep into co-planning on both the unit level and lesson level. And the purpose of this, or the broader purpose of the inquiry project, is really to pilot a lot of this co-teaching work, pilot co-planning, pilot models, learn some of these obstacles that we're going to face while trying to implement this or broaden the implementation and figure out the supports that our teachers are going to need to improve these systems as we move through. And it's a full year project, so we're about halfway at the moment. So some preliminary results. So one of our strong co-teaching teams was in 12th grade ELA at Lawndale. And this is some like very preliminary data. But we've noticed, if you look here on the right, this is the co-taught ELA class. Green shows SWEs whose percentage of mastery is above 80%. So over here we have 71.4%, while in our classes where they are not co-taught, we're seeing lower level of mastery, still pretty good, but a lower level of mastery. So pretty exciting initial results there. Just again, thinking some more information around this, why it's important. It really connects to our BPNN and advisory work, really thinking about what are kind of best practices for all of our kids to support their socio-emotional and academic health. And really thinking around how can we prevent pitfalls really when moving forward with co-teaching. It's very important that teachers are supported and have the proper professional development and like a backbone with which to build strong co-teaching programs on. Some cool results we've had so far. We have videos of our teams co-teaching, which is pretty exciting. We've completed those three PDs. We've had lots of positive feedback that they're enjoying the learning and using the new techniques and practices. Some roadblocks that we've experienced is trying to get universal participation. Again, kind of related to how this year is super challenging. It's been a little difficult to get folks from all sites after hours, but we're super excited that we can leverage the learning from the other sites to all the sites. We've noticed that there's a bit of a learning curve for newer teachers in co-teaching, which perhaps is expected, but definitely a little bit of a roadblock. And then really trying to find exemplar models at the secondary level has been a bit of a challenge, but I plan to really double down and try to find some really good examples for our teams because it's something that they really want to see. And moving forward, we plan to deepen the implementation of the models, see more exemplars, continue to collect data, and work with the team to make sure when we scale up that we avoid some of the challenges that they face. Any questions on the co-teaching inquiry?
I don't have a question, but I did want to share an appreciation for both you, Michael, and Mr. Trejo, for your work in co-teaching at Gardena Middle School. I have to say that a couple years ago when I came into the middle school and saw co-teaching happening, it was very visible who the students with exceptionalities were. It was clear that they weren't being supported adequately and were feeling very frustrated in the classrooms. And right now, the fluidity in the classrooms and the way that students feel supported, it's really hard to identify who the students with exceptionalities are. It's very clear that they feel supported and they're part of the whole. And that's the intention of co-teaching for that purpose. So I just wanted to appreciate it because it's markedly different than it was 2 years ago. And I, you know, Mr. Trejo, you too, because you've really been deeply involved in that as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, this portion will be slightly shorter. So another thing that we're super excited about is our new universal service tracking system that we implemented across all of our sites. I should have thought of adding this. Why do we need a service tracking system in the first place? So basically we need to keep track of all of our related services like speech and counseling to make sure that what we promise we'll deliver our kids each year in their IEP, we actually do follow through with those services. And also our authorizers like to see that we follow through with that as well. So we previously used a different system, which really we had trouble really knowing if we were on track and really understanding where we were at. So our new system allows us to accurately track all of our owed minutes, which improves our ability to compliantly serve our SWEs and allows us to easily report this data to our authorizers, like copy paste, super easy. So why this is important, it connects to like systems approach and trying to use universal systems across sites. Again, allows us to easily track year-to-date progress. So we know if we're on track, like we can't like find out it in the IEP that we're behind on services. We want to know like right from the beginning if we're behind or not. It allows us to improve the accuracy in communicating with our authorizers and helps improve our service delivery and supports. So I'm going to give you a quick demonstration, though I'm not going to click on that because then you'll see student data. Can you all see my screen? So this would be an example of counseling data at Inglewood. Yeah, that's really awesome, as you can see. It's green, which is good. And the way our teachers input the data is they will just click the dropdown and put in the amount of minutes on the date that they serve the student. And then it tallies up over here. Full transparency. Let me show you some less great data. But the less great data is even more important because it's essential that we keep track of anything that we're owed. So this is our speech and language assistant minutes, where we were down a speech and language assistant for about a month this year, unfortunately. So here we can see the exact amount of minutes we owe and just look in every week and make sure that we're chipping away at that towards our goal of being back at 100%. So super excited about this, and it makes it super easy because when it's time to report owed minutes, I just copy this column and the student names, which are blacked out at the moment for y'all. And I'm able to report that to our authorizers. Any questions about our service tracking system?
Michael, this is Janina. I am curious, what type of tracking system did we have before?
We used our SACE system, which is the system that we use that kind of tracks and holds our IEPs. But some challenges with it is that it takes about like a minute or two to input a service record, where ours takes about like 2 seconds. And it doesn't allow us to track year to date without like looking at the individual kid at the granular level. So there's no way to kind of look out and see. Like for me, I can just kind of click on there and just see red and green. And for our principals as well, then we can know really if we're on track or not and be able to intervene a lot quicker and easier. If that makes sense.
Yes, excellent work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other questions on the service tracker? All right, let's jump into EL. And Geneva and Casey, you have total freedom to jump in on this as you're a part of our Learning While Leading cohort, but feel no obligation. I'm really excited about this work we've been doing with Ensemble. So two of our school sites created inquiry groups with 4 to 6 staff members to participate in really EL program analysis and development work with Ensemble Learning, which is a nationally based consulting group for English learners who's worked with quite a few charter schools in the LA area as well that have pretty successful programs. So we decided to work with them as well. And this program we're in is a grant-funded program, so it's free to us, which is really great as well. We've attended 4 PD sessions. Our site leaders get specific individualized coaching from an ELD consultant. I believe it's every 2 weeks. And both have reported that it's been going really well for them. Just another like principal level person for them to interact with. So specifically around ELD, but I know they've also ventured into other avenues as well, which just shows the strength of those relationships. And basically our teams have conducted some analysis of our EL data. They've conducted empathy interviews with students, which is basically you are walking students through, asking them about of a bunch of questions about how they feel about our programs and the supports here. We determined who our warm demanders are, which are people who are really open to like EL learning. And they're currently working on a culture goal and action plan, which is really exciting. So again, this connects to our BPNN and advisory work and honoring all of our equity groups. It really specifically connects with our BPNN because our both of our site teams chose to do a culture goal related to Check for Understanding for English learners. So we kind of see the overlap there between some of the other work, and also allows us to use similar observation tools as we're using for BPNN, reduce some of the workload there. And really, it allows us to do some deep learning and thinking in groups around our EL programs in the hope of improvement. So some positive results we've seen is leaders reporting positive feedback from the one-on-one consulting, our assessments of students, our assessment of biases, and our warm demanders led to deeper understandings of ourselves and our programs. And our culture goals, like I said, are defined and aligned with BPNN. So next steps. So this is a whole year program. So next steps, we're implementing the culture goal next semester, and then we plan out instructional goals for fall implementation. So we do like instructional data dive, and then do a an instructional goal for next fall. We're going to continue to collect our data, and we're going to redevelop all of our EL master plans and use them to help drive strategic planning and improvement. Any questions on the ensemble cohort? Awesome. So lastly, and very briefly, I want to share it's a little bit of a theme, inquiry group data. So I want to share some new EL data system that we've been using this year, which has really helped improve some of our workflows and systems and processes. So Elevation is a database that stores all information about our English learners. It has our notification and monitoring processes built into it, and also helps us focus specifically on EL data. So why do we like this? It's been really, really beneficial. Again, systems approach, just using similar processes and data systems across sites. Previously, everybody had their own way of managing EL data and notifications and processes. They were all wonderful, but they were very complicated and completely different at each site. So this kind of gives us a little bit more alignment. We can share, best practices, help each other. It really streamlines a lot of our systems. So it streamlines our monitoring systems. So all of our monitoring forms, it syncs with PowerSchool. So all of our monitoring forms and processes are built in. It can easily be pushed out to teachers in basically one click. Similarly with reclassification. Previously, our reclassification systems were very complex spreadsheets. And now the system just tells you who's ready to reclassify based on criteria that we input. It significantly improves our workflow for any type of notification to families, because we can literally do a couple clicks and send out notices to our entire EL population. So an example of this would be our initial parent notification process. Probably took at least a week or two for people to get all the data together and send out the letters. Now it takes an hour. So a lot of beneficial savings there. Did I miss anything here? And data-driven, just being focused on monitoring our EL data and making sure our students are successful in real time. And really quickly, let me show you this. Or wait, I already set this up. So this would be an example of when I log in, I can see all of my EL students, all of our monitored students. I can click down to that, see them all listed out here. I can click on students that have a 3 on LPAC, who we need to push to a 4 so they can reclassify. We got 68 of those across our sites. This is what that would look like. This is an individual student page, so I can see student test results over time. So I'm hiding the names and stuff on purpose. So sorry about that. So really great. We can kind of, this kiddo took a little bit of a dive in the pandemic. That's okay. I'm sure we're intervening. And then there's things like this where we can build letters and criteria for our parents and just kind of send them out in really streamlined fashion. Thank you so much. Any questions about Elevation? Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure chatting with you all. I do have a little bit of feedback here, which I'll drop in the chat. If you have any specific student services related feedback that you'd like to give me, totally optional. thank you so much.
Since Michael and the principals are invited to leave after this point in the meeting, and I know they have a lot on their plates, I just wanted to open up for any appreciations for them, and I'll launch it myself. Like, it's awe-inspiring, the number of systems you've implemented in this time, and it just makes me so grateful that we are on top of things in a way that we haven't been before. But it's also just, you can see the ESSER and the GEAR and all of these funding sources that we've gained access to at play right now, and how much of an impact they will have on our students long-term. But infusing these resources and bringing our eyes to student groups in a different way. So thank you, Michael, for the presentation, but also for everything you've been holding and doing this year. I just want to open up to any other appreciations, both for Michael or the principals, before they have to log off. And Danielle, you're staying with us, so you can, we can appreciate you later.
I just want to say how exciting it is to have Michael on staff, and with someone with his level of expertise in the world of special education, because it means that, you know, we can make sure we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's, but also, so, you know, we're covering the compliance stuff, but we also now have a kind of a visionary for equity for those student groups. And I think that's exciting because it's part of our mission, but now there's a champion at the home office level, and that's really important. And you can see all the progress that we've made in this semester. I think this is, Michael, this is like your 1 year anniversary. So I'm glad you're still here at ECS.
Can I just say how I think, I speak on everyone's behalf, how impressed we are with the professionalism and the seriousness that that these instructional leaders take this. I mean, you guys are doing what needs to be done in order to really address all the trauma and all the effect of the pandemic that these students are dealing with. You guys are preparing yourself. I mean, I think you guys are the best in the country. So thank you.
I do want to add one more thing. So in a conversation with one of the principals today, they shared that we think about our role as a charter school system in hopes of like transforming public education from within. And when we think about our model and how incredibly successful some of our schools are, it's really hard to recognize the fact that it takes our leaders working as hard as they do, and that model isn't really necessarily replicable. And that's true of all of these leaders who are sitting around the table. And it's just really, you know, it's a work of passion and it's a commitment to our mission. And we're all a little type A and overly willing to spend our nights and mornings and family time and weekends and vacations doing this work, which is amazing. And I think just an aspiration for all of us is to think about how do we do it in a more sustainable manner so that we truly can get through it together and be here together as a team, but also like really be a model for how public education can happen, because as it stands, this isn't a sustainable model and thus not replicable, right? So I just wanted to call that to attention and just appreciate, as you guys get ready to log off, Cindy, Geneva, Dave, in case you just got off, Beth, who's been stepping in regularly as a leader, and then all the directors. I'm in awe of all of you, and it's not sustainable, but you guys are awesome for what you're accomplishing, and I just deeply appreciate you all. okay with that, you're welcome to log off and have a night with your families and kids and people. Thank you for being here, and we can move on with the agenda. So the next thing is actually Dorothy's presentation. So Dorothy, do you want to share screen or do you want me to share?
I can share my screen.
Excellent. We'll stop.
Okay. All right, so this is just a quick snapshot of the changes at each school, which we'll talk about separately. So first we'll start with the high school at Lawndale. So their updated enrollment in ADA, we have the actual months on the right, and then what we had for the budget, and then the current forecast here. So you can see we are a little short, mainly because of the attendance percentage, and we will adjust it. But because the data can vary a bit, we're just waiting a little bit longer. So for the high school, overall, we had changes that were about 172,000 in their favor. So there were added grants. Well, there's the COVID testing grant and then the E-rate reimbursement that you'll see at each school. And that will help fund a bunch of technology improvements. This compensation and benefits savings of 21,000, this is just an adjustment of hours. Salaries were decreased for open positions. And then if you looked at the detail, you also see the CMO allocation has changed because the ADA, which we'll see in the next few slides, the ADA at the middle schools, we decreased it. So then the school ends up taking a little bit higher of an expense, and that higher expense was offset with those savings. And then there was a slight increase in services and other, but that was just a bunch of different changes, with the biggest change, with the biggest variance was 3,000 in instructional consultants. Next, we have the middle school in Gardena. So you can see their actual months of ADA and enrollment. We did adjust their forecast this month. So mainly we just changed the attendance percentage from 97, which is that little box, to 93.5. So you can see this 326 is more on par with their actual ADA. So their changes, we had a big change in certificated salaries. That was with an interventionist and some instructional and the instructional coach position. In classified salaries, there was some savings in paras in the ELD. This is the E-rate reimbursement that you'll see at the schools. With the lower salaries, you have savings in benefits. And then there is an increased janitorial expense, because someone has been on, or the employee has been on leave. And then this is the ADA adjustment. So with that attendance percent change, ADA dropped by just over 13. So that was 164,000 in revenue. Next is the middle school in Englewood. We also adjusted their forecast this month. Their attendance percentage was taken down to 94.2%, which is, you know, more in line with their actual ADA. So they had some savings in salaries and benefits with the CMO salaries because they have lower ADA. And there was also a position removed and some people had less hours. This is the E-rate reimbursement. They had an adjustment in their some federal title entitlement that went up by almost 30,000. And then about a $15,000 higher expense in computers. and their attendance percentage change was, you know, just under 14 ADA, and that was 177,000 in revenue. The high school in Gardena, so they are looking very strong. So I know their actual ADA is exceeding their forecast, but we're going to be conservative, mainly because the trend in a normal year is that ADA declines from the fall into the spring. So, but of course, if they keep staying at this 108, 109, we'll adjust it up. Their forecast had small changes, about 35,000. So there's the E-rate reimbursement, the COVID grant, some savings in utilities, and a higher janitorial expense. And then a look at their cash, which is positive and pretty good. Are there any questions?
Yeah, Dorothy, it's Ken. I've got a question. What's underneath the, changing the forecast at ADA? You mentioned that we're changing the forecasted percentage. Are we changing the actual forecasted headcount, or just that there's a lower percentage attendance? And kind of what do you think is underneath that?
It depends on the school. So at Inglewood, we also... I think there was also a mix of the enrollment, taking enrollment down and changing the attendance. But you can see at Gardena, you know, it's their enrollment is, you know, very close to what was originally budgeted. It just had to do with the percentage of the time the kids can attend.
I can chime in on this a little and help Dorothy. So as we talked about in the finance committee meeting, what we do every day now, all of our students and families are getting an email from Rovna, which is the system that we use that really reminds families that if your child is sick, please don't bring them on campus. So there are families who are opting to keep their children home and monitor their symptoms before they bring them in. And then there's also the required quarantining that's happening. So there's a lot linked to COVID that leads to lower attendance.
Okay.
We also made a concerted and thoughtful effort, given that we needed to increase space in our classrooms to when we had a few students drop off earlier in the year, not fill all of the spots immediately so that we can maintain adequate spacing in our classrooms. As we're looking into the next semester, we may be adding a few students back off of our wait list to improve sustainability long-term, but we're doing so strategically with a mind at like making sure we have space for everyone.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Absolutely. I see that Dave has added some to the chat.
I was just reinforcing that the threshold by which you used to keep a child home has changed dramatically, and they're not all aligned, and some folks will, despite it not being part of COVID protocols, if one sibling is just notified that someone at their school had COVID, the whole family stays home for 4 or 5 days, and you find out afterwards when you continue to call. But there's hundreds of families making those individual decisions on a daily basis. And when they used to send kids full of boogers, coughing and saying, why can't I send them? That has changed now. And if someone coughs within a mile radius, people stay home. It's changed very, very much so. And then not all parents sign up for the independent study immediately or sign the documentation. And until they sign it, we can't collect attendance for them unless they sign it and the student does work.
All right, great. Yeah.
Thank you for chiming in, Dave. Sorry, Dorothy, did you want to complete the presentation component or were you done already?
That was it.
Excellent. Any additional questions for Dorothy? I just want to appreciate questions right now. I really love the questions that you're asking. They're really thoughtful and they're pushing us to be better. So please don't hesitate. And I'm going to go back to sharing my screen. So Anthony, we're ready for the consent items.
Yes. So as we normally do, we will first get a motion to approve the consent items, and then we will open it up for any conversation regarding those consent items. So do I have a motion to approve consent items A through J?
Yeah, I'll move, Ken.
Thank you, Ken. Do I have a second?
Zena seconds.
Thank you, Zena. Okay. So Jeremiah, is there anything you wanted to discuss or Farnaz about these? And are there any questions or concerns regarding consent items A through J?
Yes, Anthony, just to briefly note that we will be tabling consent item F and presenting it at a later board meeting.
Okay, so we will, the approving of the ECSG and ECSHSL.
Yes, okay. Handbooks.
Item F, I'll just put item F, that will be removed from the consent items that can be noted.
Nothing significant to note. If anyone to dig deeper into the check registers, you'll note that we introduce our check registers with our processes for review internally prior to asking you guys to review them. That was a request by the Finance Committee, and I think it's a strong adjustment because it reminds you of our processes. And then, all of these, the educator effectiveness, all of these proposals and reports that have been prepared in order for us to get access to additional money that you see reports here. I want to appreciate both Jeremiah and Tracy for all the hard work and Dorothy for all their hard work in preparing all of these types of reports. And then I also want to appreciate Sarah Jamieson for a tremendous amount of work associated with teacher assignment and getting all of our credentialing up to par. So that's everything.
Great.
Just one thing I noticed on the academic calendars, yes, right there, for ECMSG, it says decreased instructional minutes on 12/17, and that's right. But then in the next bullet, it says decreased instructional minutes overall, and that's not the case. It should say increase, so I apologize for that typo. So the net effect of the changes at ECMSG is an increase in instructional minutes, not a decrease.
Okay, if we can make that change and that's noted.
Yes, will do.
Thank you. All right, unless there's any other questions, concerns, comments regarding consent items A through J with the note that we're tabling F, do I have Kennedy?
Aye.
Madhu? I don't know if Madhu is still available.
She indicated to me she might have to drop off for an
engagement. Okay, I don't see her on there, so I'll move on. Ken?
Yes, aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Juan?
I think he may have had to step off also.
Okay. Denise?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Anthony? Aye. So consent items A through J with F being tabled have been approved. Moving on to action items, we'll go through each one individually. For Farnaz, if there's anything or Jeremiah.
Yeah, I just want to call your attention to this one. That's why we made it an action item. We're adding a very short, I think probably a 30-minute meeting on February 24th because we need an additional approval. And we didn't want to rush to get the work done. It was unrealistic to do so prior to our January meeting time. So we just wanted to add this additional meeting on February 24th and ask you to add it to your calendars. Should only be half an hour. It will be on Zoom. So hopefully everyone can plan to attend.
Any questions, comments, concerns regarding action item A? Okay, do I have a motion to approve action item A?
I motion to approve action item A, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. second that motion. Anyone?
I'll second it. Denise.
Thank you, Denise. Kennedy.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Tina.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Anthony. Aye. Action item A has been approved. One quick question. I thought I saw in the agenda a letter extending the virtual meetings into next year by 30 days. Did I miss that?
No, that's right, Anthony. It's part of a new shift in law that allows us to continue to have remote meetings if we deem it necessary due to COVID not to have large group gatherings. And so we have that in the consent agenda today for that reason. That allows us to continue to do remote meetings for the foreseeable future until the pandemic's over.
Okay, for some reason when I read it, I thought it was just extending it 30 days from today's date, but it goes beyond the 30 days?
That is right, Anthony. You really caught on to a nuance, which is we're going to have to reapprove this resolution every time we meet because we don't meet every 30 days. But other than that, yeah, it's just going to be in the consent items.
Okay.
Unless, the board wants otherwise.
I didn't know if I was going to start eating hummus again in 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It goes all the way up to January 1st, 2024.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I know I read it somewhere and I was trying to remember where. So.
Right on.
Okay. Then I'll turn it back over to Farnaz to discuss the upcoming dates and announcements.
This is just to remind you to keep these dates in your calendars. We're looking forward to the ongoing meetings. I've really appreciated the ability to have Zoom meetings because the idea of bringing all of our leaders into one place in an open space and, you know, the risk that it exposes our staff to, I'd love to mitigate risk as much as possible since these meetings have been productive in this context. And if you have feedback on that, and if you are eager to return to in person and want to talk to me about that, I welcome the feedback, but for the time being, we will continue in this way. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, then now's the time to do appreciations. I know we had some earlier, but I open it up to the group for appreciations.
Well, I continue to appreciate everyone's focus on data, trying for continuous improvement based on feedback from data and changing and experimenting and learning. And it's just really, really gratifying to see that from everyone.
I think it's great, all the different, it was mentioned earlier, but everyone is using different technologies and platforms and systems and, I just find it fantastic and fascinating, quite frankly, on the use of that and how it's effective in the environment. It's great.
I appreciate our board for their thoughtful questions and their willingness to be here and to support our work and also for your trust in us.
And just to recognize Juan's comment that he appreciates Farnaz's leadership through this transition as we all do. So thank you, Juan, for making note of that.
I also want to appreciate Farnaz for really being a calm and sustaining force for the entire organization and for supporting all the leaders that we have here through these very challenging times. And it just means so much that she's taken on that extra burden, and done so well with it. And I couldn't say better things about Farnaz.
Thank you. I think on behalf of everyone, I agree. And like I said in the past, you rock.
You guys are too kind. I have the best team possible in the world, and I feel incredibly grateful for them. So I just can't say that enough. But I also wanted to say one little thing that I forgot to say, which isn't a little thing. It's quite big. We went over the home office survey results today, and it's the first time in 2 years that we've done it. And the feedback, you know, as you might remember, we were in the 80s in our approval, 70s, and then in the 80s in our approval rating. And for the first time this year, we're in the 90s in our approval rating for home office services. So that was an exciting measure of all the hard work that our home office team has been doing, led by Jeremiah and Sarah and Danielle. Like, it's just a testament to Tracy, all of the home office team leaders. I want to appreciate them all.
Yeah, well done. Okay, any other appreciations before we move to adjourn to the closed session?
I want to appreciate one more person. Sorry, I wanted to sincerely take a moment to thank Danielle. I just think you are such an inspirational leader. I love working with you and thinking with you and troubleshooting with you. And I've been inspired by the way that you are continuing to develop and support our principals. And they're learning and evolving because of your leadership, and it's very exciting to see. So I just want you to know I'm deeply grateful for you.
I want to say something about this whole goal of every child is a blessing. And I think people have really taken that to heart, and it's just bled into everybody's a blessing. And I think that's part of the culture that has come through. You know, if the students feel like they're a blessing, and their interaction and communication with the teachers and the administration, I think it just percolates. And I think that kind of is attributed to the high sort of feedback that we had about home office. So I'm glad that we had those sessions with Kenjis and really focused in on this goal for our school. And I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Do I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
A motion to adjourn to closed session, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
This is Janine. Go ahead, Denise.
I'll second, Denise.
Okay, thank you. All right, Kennedy.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
And I know Juan has rejoined. Juan, if you want to make a motion through the text box or chat, that's fine. He gave a thumbs up, so that would be a yes. Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Anthony, aye. Adjourning is approved to closed session. Thank you, everyone, for your participation, for your contributions, for all that you do for this organization. It's fantastic. So we can move to the closed session. Jeremiah, if you can stop recording, and if the board members can remain, that would be fantastic.
Have a good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, good night.
All right. Hopefully that works. All right. Okay, so we have come out of our closed session, and we are making an oral recommendation regarding Farnaz, our CEO and ED's fringe benefits. And so we have approved a one-time $10,000 bonus for Farnaz. And now I will ask for a motion to ratify the CEO ED's employment agreement. Do I have a motion?
Kennedy, so moved.
Do I have a second?
A second.
And that would be?
Denise.
Denise, okay, thank you, Denise. I just want to make sure it's recorded. Kennedy.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Sina.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. The ratification has been approved. And now we will move to adjourn the meeting. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I think maybe you just we all want to add that, you know, this is for recognition of her exceptional performance in these, you know, unbelievably difficult times, you know, for going above and beyond and for her leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, she has been recognized by anyone that I have spoke to that's, you know, part of this organization as a tremendous leader who has guided this organization and the people tremendously, gone above and beyond. And the culture in the operations and the attitude of this organization is, I think, the strongest that I've seen it. So it's been fantastic.
Yep.
Okay. Anyone else want to make a comment before we motion to adjourn? All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
I second, Denise.
Denise, great. Thank you, Denise. Kennedy.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Anthony, aye. Motion adjourn has been approved. Once again, thank you everyone for all your efforts, for your time. We did end at 7. We went back beyond a few minutes, but I appreciate everyone's time and effort. I think this is worth the additional minutes that we spent together. So Definitely. Take care. Have a great day.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Happy holidays. I guess we're not speaking again. Yeah.
You can call anytime, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.